everyone. Welcome to Yachting International Radio. You're with Corinne Rayson from the Crew Coach on the Wellbeing Project. Today, I have Brad with us. Brad and I have been chatting on Instagram for quite a while now, and Brad has courageously opened up with regards to polls that I've posted and shared his experience within the industry. Now, I think Brad is someone who's got a lot of resilience and able to transform adversity into something that I would say purposeful impact. And I'm really excited to talk to Brad today, not only to learn more about him, his insights and his experience, but also I think we share something very common, Brad, and that is effective leadership. So welcome to the show, and I cannot wait to get started.
Thanks, Corinne. Thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here and share my stories.
Thank you. So can you start us off with how and when did you enter the industry and where are you today?
Okay, so just a quick background. I was born in Zimbabwe and came to South Africa when I was probably around 5 years old. My parents split up when I was two. Mum brought me to SA. Dad stayed in Zim. And I started out at school in Warner Beach and moved down the coast to the small town of Scottsborough. And then, I just obviously went through my school life. I started surfing, became a pro surfer. And a couple of my friends had joined the yachting industry in those days. And they were always saying to me when I left school, hey, you should join, you know. And in those days, it was quite different to how it is now. Obviously, the industry is quite inundated with the number of South Africans and other nationals, obviously. But in those days, I think it was a lot easier to find work and things like that. But I went through a couple of phases in my life, working in sports marketing and advertising. I was in the corporate world. I worked for Mr. Price. I did the Mr. Price Pro and the Comrades Marathon and things like that. So I was involved in a whole lot of other stuff before yachting. And then one day I looked at myself in the mirror and I was just like, what are you doing? You're wearing these weird shoes and these skinny tight jeans and this pink like collared top. It just wasn't me, you know? And I decided to move to Mozambique and live in like a grass shack on the beach. And I did that for like 5 years. And I just surfed every day and dived and fished.
And ate langoustines, crayfish, fresh fish.
Yeah, I just didn't want anything to do with work. You know, it felt like my whole life was just revolved around being in an office and at a computer, you know, so it wasn't me. I wanted to be out in the ocean and in the water and involved with nature. And so I lived in Mozambique for a couple of years and then the money kind of ran out and things weren't going so well. And I thought, hey, maybe I should get back into the corporate world. So I moved back to Durban and started an advertising agency at TBWA. And then it was very quick to get to the next point thinking this isn't for me. Like, and then I decided in 2012 to go and do my first yachting course up in Langebaan in Cape Town. And that's where it started. But I have quite a unique story to entering the industry. It's like I don't know why, but weird things just happened to me. Mm-hmm. And I did my course in Langebaan, and then I decided I'm going to sell my car, sell all my sound equipment because I was a musician. I played a lot of music, loved music, and sang to make extra money, you know. And I thought, okay, I'm going to sell everything now. I'm going to take all this money. I'm going to buy myself a ticket. I'm going to go to France. And I found out a little bit about the industry from a friend of mine who had been in it for 10 years already with her now husband. And she gave me all the insight. And me being the person that I am, I'm always early to start something. I'm so keen and eager and a very passionate person. So I actually, by mistake, I went over to France a little bit too early and the season wasn't ready for me yet. And it was quite an eye-opener because I did a lot of dock walking and stuff for like 3 weeks, but there was just nothing going on. I was the only person there, didn't know what I was doing. I stayed in Biot in a small little caravan with one or two friends. But I also went over there I was all in. I didn't have much money and I didn't have much insight other than what I kind of brushed over with a few friends. But I got some day work, and then my visa was running up, and there was an opportunity for me to get a job, but I didn't know it yet. And I had 2 days left in France. And the day before I was supposed to fly out, I was walking down the dock with a friend of mine and this girl, Mignon. And she's from the same town as me. And it was both our first attempt at trying to find work in the industry. And we went very, very early in the morning to Jean Le Pen, I think.
Yeah.
And we were walking down there, and it was like my last shot. I knew I had to fly home the next day. And this guy came walking down the dock at like 6:30 in the morning. It was quite early. And we were just putting our CVs on the end of passerelles, you know, just hoping that when someone comes out in the morning, they'll pick it up. And it was our last shot, you know. And this guy came walking down with a big Marlboro jacket on, smoking a fat cigar, and very confidently came up to us, said, "Hey, are you guys looking for a job, you know?" And we were like, "Yeah, we are." And he said, "Hey, I'm a captain on a boat. One of our yachts is coming in from, I can't remember what he said, but he said, look, like, come and have a meeting with me and my crew. They're staying in a crew house here, and come and have a meeting with us at a coffee shop." So we got all excited. We were like, yeah, this is so cool. And at lunchtime we met them, and they pulled out like all this documentation that showed us the vessel. And he sat there with two of his crew members, and eventually they said to us, look, for purposes of opening bank accounts and to get you on the crew list and stuff, we need you to each give us like 250 euros to get in, you know. And being somebody who's never been in yachting before, you wouldn't know any better, you know. So there was my big, that was the big fallout for me. I was just so excited about this thing. I thought, I'll do whatever it takes to just land this first job. And I was completely conned by this guy and these two people that was with him. And
French, or did they like have French accents?
No. So he was claiming to be South African, but he looked like Argentinian to me. Like, I don't know why, but he showed me photos of himself with what's his name? With Jacob Zuma and things like that. So he said he was quite high up in those.
Weird. Like, what are the chances? Those
circles, yeah. So, you know, I'd just done some day work for a company there in Antibes, but it wasn't to do with yacht. It was a yachting company that supplied everyone with clothing. So they were moving a factory, okay? So I'd helped them for like a couple of days, and I'd been paid 500 euros for the work.
Yeah.
And the girl that was with me, she had no monies at the time of the meeting. So I just said, I'll pay for you. Like, let's just land this job. Let's get it done. I don't care. Like, I was so excited, and I knew I had to fly the next day. So for me, this was like a godsend, you know. And he took the money and he said, look, let's meet again tomorrow. And we'll go, I'll go and sort out all the bank stuff today. And that was the last I ever saw of him. We never. It was crazy because I had about 8 euros left in my wallet, in change. I'd given all my notes to this guy, and I had to fly home. And I still remember I was sitting on the side of the road, on my suitcase, with 8 euros. Waiting for the bus to get me to the airport.
Yeah.
And the bus pulled up next to me, and there was nobody on the bus except a little old lady. And I said to the bus driver, how much is it to the airport? And he said, it's 9 euros.
Oh no.
And I said to him, I've only got 8. And he said, sorry, like, you can't get on. And he like kicked me off. And I couldn't believe, and I looked at the old lady, I was like, I was hoping she was going to say, hey, I've got a euro for you, you know? And she just like looked at me and then looked away. And then I got off the bus and I thought, this is like, what's going on? And I just sat on the side of the road, and the bus drove off, and now I'm I'm going to miss my flight. And I didn't know what was going to happen. So,
my goodness.
And I just sat down on my case, like with my hands, like in my head like this. And I thought, oh my gosh, what's going on here? Like, I don't know what I'm going to do now. I've got no money. I can't get home. I'm going to miss my flight. I'm going to overstay my visa, you know, and the bus drove off. And then while I was sitting there, he turned around somewhere and he came back and he picked me up and he just said, I'll take you.
And oh my gosh.
Because by that time, I was now like very late for my flight, and he drove me like into a weird place in the airport, like around the back. And he literally dropped me off almost by the terminal. Yeah. Like, it was just this weird scenario. He had phoned somebody and they met me outside just so that I didn't miss my flight. He'd gone like to lengths to make sure that I don't miss my flights. And it was just so strange. And then from that point, I went home after that. I landed at home. I had nothing to go back to. I'd sold all my equipment that I used to generate an income playing music. And my sister had to take me in Joburg, and I was on the bones of my bum, and I had to try and find a job and get going again. You know? And then I was just like, I'm never going to do yachting again. This sucks, you know, like.
I've heard that statement many of the times.
God, I was just like, this is not happening for me. I'm not doing this. No ways. I'm just going to have to try something else. And then about a year and a half later, I got a random call. I didn't ever try and find work again. I left it. And a year and a half later, I got a call from Joy Weston at Crew Pacific. And she just said to me, hey, got your CV here. And the captain's looking for a surfer. And, you know, would you like to join a boat in Fiji, a 60-meter fit ship?
Oh, my God.
I was like, no ways. I'm like, is this for real? And then I just thought that maybe this is a scam again, you know, like I was so nervous because of what had happened before. And then that was it, eh? The captain phoned me that Friday. We chatted a little bit, and it was very weird because I'd just taken my car to the car wash. And as I walked into the car wash to put my keys down and then go for a surf while they wash my car, there was a sign there by the keys saying, count your blessings one by one. And when I got back from my surf, my phone had a missed call, but from a strange number. And I thought, hey, this could be the captain, you know. So I went, at the time, I obviously didn't have much money, and I just went to the bank and I drew like $800 and I just put it all on my phone because I wasn't sure how long the call would take. I was just, I have to phone him back. I can't miss this. And I went and phoned him, and then we chatted, and he booked my ticket, and that Monday I flew to Fiji.
Oh my gosh, what a good story in the end.
2 days later, and then that was it. That's where it started, 2014 in Fiji. And it was a world cruiser. So I was thrown into the deep end and knew nothing about yachting. I joined a crew of like 18 and all multinational.
Yeah.
So I dived into a massive pool of new experiences, new cultures, new people, new faces, not knowing what I was doing when I joined, just going for it.
Okay, so that was 2014, and now we're in 2021. So there's been a massive gap since then. Have you been in yachting during that entire time?
Yeah, so basically, when I joined that first boat in Fiji, it wasn't easy. The first like 3 to 6 weeks was very intense. There was a lot of strong characters on the boat. Got pushed around a lot. It was tough. After the first week, I was like, I can't do this, you know. And I had to keep telling myself, you've got nothing to go back to. You have to just push through this. You can do it. Like, just deal with it, you know. I was literally like waking up in the morning and trying to just do my job, put my head down, and then hide in my cabin. I wouldn't even eat breakfast, wouldn't eat lunch. I was just like, can't do this. I've got to hide away in my cabin and stay away from these. Like, I was in a weird headspace. It was very difficult.
Was it the crew dynamics, the personalities, or was it just for you the change?
I think it was a combination of a lot of things, but there was personalities that were very strong on there. That's, it was just weird, like, because I was on that vessel for 3 years after, from when I joined to that 3 years later, I actually went through a lot of different crew. Like, I saw the crew change quite a bit, and went through about two or three different captains as well. And I just got to experience the different levels of characters from the nicest to the worst, you know. It was, and like, I know I've watched a lot of your interviews with different people, and the one interview I think you did with Captain Pilati, and also
Brendan.
No, the guy from Bella.
Oh yes. Now that you put me on the spot, I can't remember, but yeah, I know who you're talking about.
I know who I'm talking about. Yes,
from Sydney. Yeah, I know who you're talking about. Yeah,
I quite like him, and I like his approach, and I, you know, I can relate to him because I've, like, you talk about leadership and that we share this maybe similar qualities or whatever. But to be honest, I don't know anything about leadership. To be honest, leadership for me has been something that I've adopted. Like the captain from Bella says, you take little bits from people that you've interacted with through your experiences, and you stuff that you like, you know, and then stuff that you don't like, you're like, I'm going to make sure I'm not like that. I'm going to make sure I don't deal with things that way. So to me, I think leadership, everyone's a leader in one way or another. Whether you're driving a car and you've got passengers in your car, you're a leader at that point because you're making decisions that reflect on you as a person, keeping people safe in that space, you know. It's your responsibility. And if you don't feel like you've got, if you don't feel responsible, you can't act responsibly.
Yeah, and it's so true. There's an amazing book called The Leader with No Title, and I think that's where hierarchy can be detrimental because the people at the top have a lot of influence and power, and the ones in more junior positions may have more intelligence, lived experience, emotional intelligence, and they're not given a voice. And that's very, very sad, but also it can, what could be, how can I describe this? It can negatively impact the growth of the team as well and impact collaboration. And leadership is so complex. And yes, I think it's great to have poor leaders and amazing leaders, and you can take a bit of everything, but that's surface level. Then you need to go really deep and understand yourself first as a leader. What are your values? What inspires you? How do you engage crew? How do you motivate crew? So that's how complex it really is. It's a lot to do with psychology, understanding yourself and understanding others.
Yeah, 100%. I think for me, like, what I wanted to say is I felt like I lost my identity when I joined Yachting. My whole dream was to be a professional surfer. So reinventing yourself in a new industry is not easy. And, you know, when you join Yachting, there's nothing that they teach you in the courses that can compare to what you go through when you join yachting, because yeah, you learn the basics of line handling and things like that, but there's so much more to yachting, like from a mental side of things, that there's stuff that you're going through that you've got to beat through almost. But yeah, for me, I felt like I had to take a new direction because my dream was to be a surfer and or to be involved in the surf industry, and I wanted to go that route, but then I felt like I was pulling at straws at one point, because you know I'd studied all the graphic design and the marketing and stuff, and then I was like, is it corporate world, is it like being a musician, or is it like pro surfing, or is it yachting? Like it, and it felt like I was spinning around in circles. But when it comes to leadership, I've never done any courses and I've never, but naturally I've always felt like you have to approach leadership in a way that's, I don't know, that you've got to be mindful about it. It's very difficult. Like, I've always been a person who doesn't like confrontation. So, and to my detriment, keeping quiet about things that aren't right is also not good, you know, because people pick up on that and they treat your kindness as a weakness and they can step all over you. And then, you know, it's bullying started for me, like, when I was very small, from the age of like around 3, you know, I got in school and things like that. You know, there was always like 3 guys when I was very young that used to come and find me at break times and beat me up for no apparent reason. So whenever that bell went that I had to like step out of class, I was always like on high alert. And I'd found this like place in it, just off the playground, like in a bush that I'd go and hide out in and eat my lunch to try and avoid these guys finding me. And that never really stopped. I mean, I went through that for like 2 or 3 years. And then when we changed schools, one of the guys who's now my best friend, he was the next bully at the new school, you know. And I eventually stood up to him the one day and I said, you know, I'm not going to take this anymore. And after we had a little scuffle, he invited me around to his house to meet his family and we became best friends, you know, like, and been my best friend ever since. But I've learned through also standing up for yourself and opening up your mouth and voicing your concerns, it helps, you know. So it's something that I've had to practice in more recent times because I rejoined the yachting industry after a 2-year break, after an incident that's was pretty traumatic for me. That I realized that, you know, I don't want to go into too much detail, but, you know, I was working on a boat that it was a private boat, but it was chartering heavily with friends and guests, back to back, 2-week charters, with 1-day turnarounds for 5 months solid. If you got 2 hours off the boat to go for a quick walk, that was a lot, you know. The hours were hectic. We went for 2 days once without rest. It was quite an intense environment. There was one or two characters on the boat that was very difficult to deal with. And for me, it was just a very tough experience. You know, after 5 months, I was just, you know, my head was like, I need to get out of here. But it all came down to a point where, someone got really badly injured and I ended up saving their life. And it became one of these situations where it was like, that could be me. And, you know, after the incident happened, the guy was very lucky that I was where I was at that time, when it happened, because if I wasn't in that particular position, nobody would ever have seen him again. Nobody would ever have seen him. We may have never found him either. So it was a hectic experience for me. I was threatened after that not to say anything. I was told that I'd never get a job in the industry again if I said anything to anybody. And it became one of those things where I was like, if that was me, is this all worth it? You know, like that person could have been me. And, there's not enough money in the world to, you know.
So do you feel that sort of behavior, that bullying, is prevalent in the industry? You've got companies like myself, whether it or yacht management companies that might not hear all the details of what goes on. And we know about harassment, assault and bullying, but you know, the actual details of what you're describing where you get threatened, do you feel that it is quite common?
I'm not sure, because it only really happened to me in that on that occasion. But I mean, what happened after that is I started doing some research on you know, incidents in the industry and how people have handled it, you know, and I've read some horrific stories, and it seems to be quite common. And you, like, these days we're all like completely absorbed by things like Instagram and stuff. So you just see all these people with happy faces, and it's like a big screen, like a smoke screen of what's really going on, because it's not all, you know, butterflies and rainbows in the industry. There's some tough stuff going on. There's some hard characters. There's some negative things. Like, it's not all like smooth sailing, you know? And I think that it's probably more common than what we think with regards to bullying and stuff. But for me, it only really happened a couple of times. And unfortunately, it was just super intense, and that's why I took that break from the industry. I was like, I either need a break or I need to get out. Mm-hmm. And so I took that break. It was, and after that incident, even when I came home, I got back into driving boats and at home in South Africa, and you know, I it was a slippery slope for me. I felt like I didn't realize that I was trying to deal with something without actually talking to somebody about it. I was so nervous about talking about it. I didn't want to bring it up with anybody. I didn't want to tell anybody about it. So, you know, obviously I started drinking more. Like, I would just go out and get absolutely smashed up, because it was the only thing that could kind of like get my head past all this traumatic experience that I had. And I felt like I was slipping into a very dizzy stage. And I had to pull myself out of that as well. Like, I had to stop myself and say, like, you know, get over this. You know, it's in the past. Let it go. Deal with it. Move on.
So you did that by yourself?
I beg your pardon?
You did that by yourself? Did you reach out for support in the end, or did you have to just pull the handbrake up and going, this behavior isn't going anywhere? Like, I'm self-sabotaging.
I was completely self-sabotaging myself. You know, I was going into a dark phase, and I didn't realize it at the time, like, going through it. I was just like, oh my gosh, I just need to let loose. Just, you know, because you've been through such a, not just the traumatic experience, but the whole thing leading up to it. Like, yachting is quite hectic on the mind, body and soul, you know, like, absolutely. it's intense. And when you break out of that, you almost like the wheels can easily fall off. And they were falling off for me, and it took me a while, but I realized that my behavior wasn't appropriate, and it's not getting me anywhere. It wasn't the right way to deal with things. And then I met Tash, and she turned my whole life around, you know. Like, she flipped me 180, and I used to socially smoke and things like that. I haven't touched a cigarette in years now. And the drinking's completely gone, and all those things that used to almost like taint me are now in the past. And I've come out the other end a lot stronger, but I went through it kind of on my own, you know. Like, I should have gone and maybe spoken to somebody about it or dealt with it in a different way, but I've come out the end pretty strong, and since I've rejoined the industry, I haven't changed as a person. I've just got a different perspective, and this time around, it's a much better approach for me.
Well, that's so good to hear. I'd love to know, if it's okay with you, if you could describe some words to highlight what that experience was like for you when you felt alone.
It was tough. It's probably the best word to describe it as dark.
Yeah.
It's very dark, you know. You're afraid to there's fear in there as well. There's a lot of fear. It's dark and it's cold. Like you start shutting people out in your life. Mm-hmm. You forget to communicate with your family and your friends. Mm. And because I'm generally quite a quiet person, I keep to myself. I'm not an extrovert at all. I'm quite introverted actually, but, avoiding like confrontation, all these things, it doesn't give people around you much to work with. So they start making their own assumptions about you. And that can also make things worse for you, because now you're starting to like deal with negative things where you really need the support in a positive way. And it just starts to spiral like that. You just start to go down and down and down and down. It feels like someone's pulled the plug in and all the water in your life is just starting to go down the drain, you know? So yeah, I would say the best word to describe going through everything alone like that, it's quite dark and it's scary.
Yeah. And did you feel that you were different? I've got a client and he's going through or experiencing depression at the moment, and he is crying quite frequently. If he watches a soap, he finds himself crying. He is lacking motivation, drive, which has never been an issue before. He is isolating. So all those common signs with regards to depression. And often he would say, I need to be fixed. I'm screwed up. I'm screwed up. I'm screwed up. And I see it differently. Like, yes, he's going through this metamorphosis where he's coming through some really significant realizations based on past trauma that he's never, never addressed. And now it's this shift because he has been suppressing it for so long and now it's resurfaced and he's like, oh gosh, this is so much to deal with right now. And being emotional, which is not part of how you know yourself, is so contrastingly different and hard to deal with. So yeah, I think it can be such an internal struggle. And it's very interesting because in our membership last week, and we call it a virtual happy hour, where we get to connect with like-minded crew members so we don't feel alone and we feel understood, heard, and there's no judgment in that space whatsoever. And the one girl said, yeah, it's like working on yourself as a double-edged sword. It is painful, but once you move past that pain, it is so beautiful. And I was like, wow, yes, that's so true. It's exactly like that.
Yeah, I mean, I can relate completely. So you were asking me to share my insight on dealing with stuff like that?
Yeah, I think you have. And I think you're highlighting that it is such a dark space and you feel alone, you feel disconnected, and you don't know how to get out of it and don't know who to turn to ask for help. That's what I've heard from you sharing.
Yes, I think it's important to speak to someone because, you know, if you're only talking to yourself, you could be your own worst enemy, and that's not going to help you. I can relate to how he's feeling. I've often felt like that quite a bit. I mean, I've obviously dealt with depression quite a bit because of stuff I've been through. Even to this day, I deal with things differently to most people. I don't run for help all the time. I'm usually the one trying to help others. It's been a difficult thing for me in my life to accept help or to find help or to ask for help. So I'll deal with things on my own, you know, in my own quiet space. I'm quite comfortable doing things on my own. But the best thing, which is why I've obviously been very interested in your casts and things like that, because just listening to you talk to other people about stuff in the industry, it's really given me motivation and insight into a lot of things that I deal with on my own, you know, just by listening. And that's why I reached out to you and I've told you a couple of things that I've been through and all that. But like I said, I'm always much better at writing than I am talking. But
I think you're doing a fantastic job with sharing. And it is about speaking from the heart more than anything else, because that's where the truth lies. When we think too much in trying to process to say the right thing, then it can sound a little bit more calculated. That's why I don't plan my interviews. I just want to have a natural conversation and see where it goes. So you're doing an incredible job sharing. And I want to say thank you for your courage as well. I've worked with a lot of South Africans, and what I've noticed, I'm South African. So what I've noticed, there's a pattern there around the stigma with regards to asking for help and it being a weakness, and showing emotion being a weakness. And there was a trauma recently on board, and one of the gentlemen who were on the front line, it's almost like there's a facade there where he doesn't actually want to deal with it because it's too hard. Like, how do I even process something so traumatic? So he buries himself in work and says, I'm fine. I'm fine.
Mm.
And it's so hard for other crew who don't feel fine and maybe more in touch with their feelings, sees this behavior from a leader and thinking, oh, it's not okay for me to not be fine. I need to be fine. I need to hold it together. Let's just soldier on and do the work.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Well, that's an approach I've always taken in yachting, is that when I feel like I'm, you know, when I feel like someone's coming down on me or speaking to me badly or bullying me or pushing me around, it's been difficult for me. Like, I hear this a lot of these things, like, you know, kill them with kindness and stuff, but I've never been that kind of person. I can't pretend that things are okay when they're not. Mm-hmm. It's all over my face. It's all over my body language says everything. So the only way I've dealt with stuff like that is to just put my head down and do the best possible job I can, you know, and that's what pushes me through. You know, people see that, you know, I work hard, I have a good, strong work ethic, and I stick to that, you know. And when somebody's really like trying to have a go at you and poke you and push all your buttons, the best thing for me to do, the way I've, my out from that is to just put my head down and just do the work and try and like block that out. And that's how I've dealt with it so far, you know.
But is that sustainable? I think it's great, because once you start reacting, you're feeding the bully with a response that they want to get. So by putting your head down and doing the work and not engaging with the behavior is helpful. But from a long-term perspective, when someone's constantly pecking at you and then you retire for the evening in your cabin and then you feel, as you said, physically, emotionally, psychologically drained, how do you take care of yourself during that time?
Yes. Well, like I said, I've always tried to avoid confrontation, so it's not the best approach. But just in that moment and in that time, to not react to the poking and that. Look, there's been one or two instances where I have reacted, and I've had to go to the captain and say, "Look, I'm sorry. Like, I overreacted. I should never have said those things. Or I'm trying to deal with it. But you know, if when someone keeps pushing you, they eventually push you over the edge." And then so I think that's one of the things you've just got to learn to deal with as well, is when you are getting pushed around and things like that, or spoken to in the wrong way, you need to have the tools and the understanding of how to deal with that at the same time. If you don't, then you can react in the wrong way and it can be to your detriment. But I've learned a lot, like especially in the last few months. I've learned a hell of a lot, and I've started dealing with things differently. I've got a whole new perspective. I'm facing my fears. Mm-hmm. Speaking up. I'm going through the correct route to deal with problems, or maybe not necessarily always the correct route, but different routes that I'm trying to. And I'm making a concerted effort to be a better person, to be able to react differently in situations where I normally would lose control. And it's worked out for me, and you know, people also notice that. They notice that you're making an effort, and they're always there to, well, the right people will be there to help you, you know. Mm-hmm. And just in my last most recent cases, I'm currently working under an amazing captain who's very supportive, very understanding. He's always got time for his crew. He's always considerate, considers everything to do with our personal life and work life and workspace. And thankfully with him now, he's very approachable. So in the past, I've never really worked under captains that have been like approachable. It's been more difficult.
Yes. And what I'm curious now to learn a little bit about his background, if you know it. Has he been working in the industry for a long time? What makes him different? Have you had a discussion around leadership with him where he learned those skills with regards to being approachable? And in my leadership course, we talk about transformational or servant leadership, and that's what he sounds like, a transformational leader.
To be honest, I don't know too much about my current captain, but what I do know is that he's a good guy, and that he's respectful and considerate, and he's got all these amazing qualities that I've not had before as from a leader, you know.
Yeah.
So for me, that makes a huge difference. I'm completely comfortable in my position. I know that I've always been an honest person, so if I don't know something, I won't pretend to know it. Mm-hmm. I can go to him and say, I don't understand how this works. And I've always been one of those people who I need to understand what I'm doing instead of just doing something because I got told to do it. So in that way, he's
patient.
He's patient. He's got patience, a lot of patience. Yeah, for sure. Mm. And it's made a massive difference to me and my job and what I'm doing. I feel almost free now. Like it's weird. I don't feel like I'm in a cage trying to hide, you know.
Yeah, I'm so happy for you. And just quickly before we finish off, you mentioned identity, that you felt like yachting, you lost part of your identity, and also it sounds like you've worn so many different hats. And when you have, then it's about searching, well, which hat do I need to choose? And I feel like a lot of us think that we need to choose one identity, one hat to wear. And it's really, really interesting because you're not the only one that's mentioned that. I personally have found that when I was working in the industry, I felt that I was losing my identity, and that motivated me to find my identity. And in the other course that I have, which helps yachties exit the industry, the course name is called Discover Your Career Potential. And it looks at the purpose and the passion and who you are, what is your why, and how you can channel that into a meaningful, purposeful career pathway. So how have you managed those different identities, and where are you at today with it?
Well, my vision is still exactly the same as it was growing up. I've not changed where I want to eventually be in my life, and that's still to be involved with surfing. I've always wanted to have a surf camp somewhere. I wanted to live a simple life, you know. I wanted to grow my own food and all those things. So the vision is still there. It's always in my mind. Like, I dream about it all the time, and I talk about it all the time with my girlfriend, and you know, she's very involved in the diving industry, and that's so we come from like shared visions as well, you know. She's very good at what she does, but diving and surfing and all that stuff all involved in the sea is kind of like where we want to head towards, you know.
That's where your heart is at. Yeah
So like, talking about wearing different hats, I'll be wearing the surfing hat now when I go home, you know. I'll be putting the yachting hat down and putting a different hat on again, and getting in touch with my true passion again, you know.
And that's the thing. I don't think we have to set on one thing and find that one thing. It's about being flexible and adaptable and integrating those different interests and passions in your life when you see fit.
Exactly. I mean, who says you have to do one thing for the rest of your life? It's know, variety is the spice of life. If you're just doing like one, if you're going to be a mechanic and just get oil dripped on your face for the rest of your life and lying underneath a vehicle, that sounds boring to me. You know, like I've been fishing for like most of my life. I love fishing, deep sea fishing and all that. So I've got quite a lot of experience doing that. I love surfing. I love playing guitar and singing. I love drawing and art. And I'm a creative person. I'm a very passionate person. Everything I do, I don't do it half-heartedly. It's all or nothing. I don't see any point in doing something just for the sake of doing it. It's like you've got to be passionate about it. So that's where yachting came in for me. I wanted to be back on the ocean. Didn't care if I had to float on it with a boat, or if it was paddling on a surfboard, or diving underneath the water, and you know, it just anything to do with the ocean was where my interests lay. So I was willing to try anything, and that's why I got into yachting. And obviously, it's lucrative. So yachting helps a lot of people set their true passions up for the future. So that's one of the reasons I'm in it. But I'm not in it for the money. I'm in it to enjoy myself and to find my identity again, I suppose. I don't know.
Yeah, brilliant. I must connect you with a past student from that course, because she shares very similar values and vision that you and your partner have. And I think you guys would have a great conversation. So I will connect you both. Brad, thank you so much for your time.
It's a pleasure, Corinne. Thanks for having me. And I didn't babble on too much, but
no.
I was very nervous before, but I try to just relax and just speak my mind and my heart.
Well, how are you feeling now?
A bit more relaxed, yeah. But great. I wish I felt more like this in the beginning.
I should have warmed you up in the beginning.
Yeah, but thanks very much. I appreciate it. And,
my pleasure. And thank you for sharing your story with us.
It's a pleasure.